This is Rob DeLuca from UFO, and I give you the right to rock.
The right to rock.
Recorded live at Nightmare Studios, you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show, brought to you by therighttorock.com. Horns up. Get ready for two guys who are so metal, they sleep in the garage. It's Genghis and Ragman.
You doing?
Are you right over there?
Happy battle.
Calm yourself, Vivian.
You've been watching a lot of fucking bad news, huh?
The young ones.
Yeah, a little bit.
Nice. What do we? Let's fucking knock this out, dude. We got. How we doing tonight? How you doing over there?
I was doing good till you fucked up the last show.
That's neither here nor there. But the fact of the matter is,
it wasn't you. It was actually Pimples.
Yeah, Pimples fucked up because he got his hand into everything. But what's nice is we're watching a little Thin Lizzy.
Yeah, totally.
As you and I. Who is you and I? That's me, Genghis, you, Ragman,
how
and
you
the
going?
Genghis and Ragman show. How you doing over there?
Good.
Hey, guys, I just fucking shit.
Fucking Pimples. Jeez. Can we gas the booth? Where's the button?
John, get him off the mic, please.
Yeah, kill him. Stab him.
Familiar.
If you need to stab him, that's fine.
Hey, guys, that was not his fuck up.
That's cool. Kill him anyway.
Is it legal?
I will make it legal.
Dude, you made me do a Star Wars quote, Holmes.
Nice, Holmes.
To do Emperor Palpatine, Holmes.
John looks perplexed.
And he's like, what?
Nelly Sykes.
Sykes. You know, I don't know if you know this,
but
I saw Thin Lizzy with Sykes.
Lucky bastard.
It was incredible.
I didn't want to go.
Why were you there? You should have been there with
me.
I looked to the right and said, aren't these guys out? I was like, oh, shit, he's not here. Where is he? And you were like somewhere else, dude.
I was tending to my family that I love.
Nah, whatever. No, it was pretty bad. Of course, I had Mendoza's nipple in my eye. Mendoza! The red. I know, that's why I felt the whole time. I'm like, if I see that nipple ring one more motherfucking time, Mendoza, I don't need that.
You're a dreamer, I'll make it on for you.
Nope.
Make it this one.
Nope. You entertain yourself there with the mute button.
Please
on.
Do. Please
let's
do.
Move along. Again, like I say, you got Genghis and Ragman here. We got the Genghis and Ragman show where we talk about heavy metal.
What do we listen to?
Hard rock.
We came into this.
Craft beer. We were listening to the
Frankenstein's Rooster. Or
Frankenstein's
something?
Rooster, dude, off their new album, which is pretty fucking wild. It is called Nervotic. What's it fucking called? Sorry, we'll start again.
Your drop part.
Walking Shred was the name of that track. That's off the Nervotic Sounds Escape. It's a hard fucking word to pronounce.
A little bit.
It's another one of those musical acts like Matthias Eklund's Freak Kitchen, where you get this blend of different genres where the glue that holds it together is the melodic shredding of the guitarist, and in this case, it's Raffaello or Rafael Indiri, who has played with Elvin King and Hardua.
His name is Reinhold.
No, that's Raffaello.
Reinhold.
Raffaello.
Reinhold.
Raffaello. Raffaello, you motherfucker.
Look. Don't even argue. Just let him say, yeah, you're right.
Sure.
That's what I do with my 11-year-old. And okay, you're right. Whatever.
I don't even care. It's like, I'm going to forget this conversation by the time I wake up in the morning.
No shit. So you don't argue, even though you know you're right.
And you're always right. No, seriously, though, Frankenstein Rooster basically is like another, it's like another Freak Kitchen, which is pretty badass. Oh, is that Sykes?
Yeah.
Our boy?
Johnny Ray Sykes.
Johnny Blue Sykes.
He gave up the Ray.
No, seriously, though, yeah, we're watching a little Awesome Thin Lizzy live while we talk about whatever our topic hits us. I mean, do we jump into beer? Do we jump into anything else?
Thin Lizzy. Live in concert, 1983, right?
83, wow. Yeah. So this is pretty old. It's over
Thunder
20 years
Lightning
old.
Tour. Last tour, Sykes was with
them. Oh, shit, it would be 30 years old, wouldn't it? 32 years old?
Let me get my calculator.
I know. Pull up my abacus. Move the beads around. He's over 30 years old. That's amazing.
Isn't that crazy?
You know, every time I see a video, I have to say, of Thin Lizzy, I'm always amazed. Phil Lynott was just a bad motherfucker.
Oh, he was a shit, dude.
He just had this great fucking... I don't understand. Did he literally commit suicide, or did he die of an overdose?
Drug overdose.
Okay, so he didn't mean to die.
I think he
got
pneumonia,
just...
too, but it was
okay.
All... It was a
but it's different
thing.
Than
it,
like he hung himself or something
no.
Like he wanted to die.
No.
He died because he kind of fucked up.
It was a bad shape.
It was a mistake, yeah.
Very, very... Like,
you know, I gotta say, you know, that's always sad because
it is sad.
This dude had crazy talent. I mean, basically, every as awesome as Thin Lizzy was, every song was written by Phil, wasn't it?
Pretty much.
I mean, what made it awesome, of course, was, you know, the baddest guitarist like John Sykes, who lent
Scott
the talent
Long.
To it. But basically, it was written
Moore.
By Phil. Yeah,
a
I mean,
lot
he,
of great guitar.
He
players.
Gave him the bones, and they just embellished.
Brian Robertson,
fucking amazing. And like I said before, I've seen. Thin Lizzy with John Sykes is a killer fucking concert.
I saw Sykes with Blue Murder.
That see, I don't know who's the more jealous, because I mean, you like, fuck, I missed Thin Lizzy, but I'm like,
yeah.
Blue Murder would have been fucking awesome. Tony Franklin's a fucking monster.
Oh yeah,
Vinny.
He's barefoot and all home.
It's Vinny, right? Was in Blue Murder, or was it Carmine?
Carmine.
It was Carmine. Okay, and then of course the insane John Sykes is amazing.
Yeah, totally.
And I got my version of it. I got to see Thin Lizzy with Sykes, Mark Mendoza.
Was that Numbers?
No, it was over at, like on the south side of town, like Cardi's, where Cardi's is.
Oh really?
That old ass.
Oh wow.
Version of Cardi's, yeah, over there off the Southwest Freeway.
That would have been awesome.
Oh fuck yeah, it was a great fucking show. But the point is, anyway, you got these great bands, you got a great fucking video. Phil is amazing.
Oh yeah, totally.
It's a shame that it never that it ended so soon.
Yeah, I agree. You want to play some Thin Lizzy?
Yeah,
we
let's
have
do a little tribute
play
real quick.
Thin Lizzy.
Yeah, definitely.
What do you want to play?
Let's see. Let's do a little Bad Reputation.
Done. Turn yourself around.
He's got a bad reputation, Holmes.
He does, Holmes.
He's like, how do I clear my name? I don't know what to do.
I'm going to get F's in school, be punished forever.
That's right. My credit report is going down, right? Yeah. Phil seemed like a cool dude. I guess he was he Irish?
Yeah, Irish.
From Ireland or just from the UK?
He lived in Dublin.
Dublin. Oh, he really was. Yeah. And yet he looks like, he looks like a black dude. Can I say that?
He is black.
Okay, that's wild.
I think his father was white and his mother was black, or his vice versa.
That's wild.
I read his biography years ago, and very good biography. They could make a movie out of his life. It'd be cool.
I know, that would be fascinating, man. I love stuff like that.
Some really cool stories. I've heard Gary Moore talk about him quite a bit.
Was he a nice guy? Was he a good guy? Dude?
Yeah.
I mean, that just makes all the more tragic a story,
right? Just
got
messed up on drugs.
Yeah, it's too bad, dude. That's all the more tragic a story to lose somebody like that. I mean, you think it would have been writing today. I mean, that's the thing. It just seemed like his talent was just fucking endless.
Oh,
every riff he came up with just sounded like, that's another kick-ass riff, dude.
You imagine when 80s metal was at its height? He died, I think, in 86 or something like that.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
The music he would have came up with.
Fuck
yeah. And Lizzie probably would have got back together.
Yeah, they could have done some amazing shit.
I think after Sykes got fired after Whitesnake, that was his thought, was to get back with Phil.
Because
they get along real well.
That's too fucking bad.
And look how badass Sykes is.
He's always the man, dude. He makes it look like, whatever, I'm just kind of jamming.
He's like, I'm about to fall asleep over here.
Oh, but I'm just ripping while I'm doing it.
Shit.
Shall we jump into a beer, dude, before we do a topic?
Before we jump in the beer,
what you got?
Why don't we
precursor
our topic?
Preface?
Yes. Yeah.
Why don't we preface our topic with
it's like a precursor.
Sure.
Whatever.
We make our own.
I want to play some classic rock. A little Don Felder.
Oh, nice.
Still.
Of course, it's very prescient. There's another 50 Cent word.
Look at you.
That you use that song because, of course you can. I encourage it. Because it ties into our topic tonight, right?
Well, we're going to drink a beer first.
Hey, yeah. Let's not get too close into it. We got some nice singles here.
Mr. G, kick it off.
Yeah. trying to target yourself over there. These are some, I'm excited about these because when I went recently, well, was it recently? Yeah. It was a while back, but I went to, on Thanksgiving last year, I went to our local Big Shot.
If you lived in New York, would you call it Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving over here. Yeah, finished with over here.
Fucking Thanksgiving. Going to my mom's house.
Exactly. My
hey, Joe Clamps, how you doing?
Hey, how you guys doing?
It's nice to see you, Holmes. What are you doing over there?
Uncle Sal says hi.
All right, well, we'll let you get back to what you're doing there while we get back to our show. We appreciate the work you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it, man.
Sounds good. All right, I gotta go.
He's a nice guy. You don't want to piss off his Uncle Saul because he might come and fuck you up.
Are he and Tommy boys?
I think they might be. They Their family sort of knows a family knows a family. Yeah, exactly. That's why it's like, suffice it to say, it's like, good to see you. We don't want to have any bad blood between us.
Any problems.
Unless you get like some dude out of the shadows at night, going to your car, some guy with a pipe comes up and fucks you up.
Shit, the fucking news.
Shit, takes Tonya Harding's your ass in the parking lot. But no, seriously, these beers here, that we're doing some singles tonight. And these were available when I went to get the Bourbon County Stout, the famous, infamous Goose Island Bourbon County Stout, which is legendary. They had this. Oh, this is the one other beer which everybody in the line, because as you recall, the line just wound all throughout the store and then out the side of the store. I was in the line for like an hour and a half before I got to get the beer. And as soon as they got out there, they said, holy fuck, it's this beer. And they grabbed this as well as the other one.
Oh, wow.
So I figured, but I didn't have enough money. It's like, let me calm down. I'm buying a lot of shit already. So I let it go, and you found it, which is great. This
in
is
Oklahoma.
Yeah, Ivan the Terrible Imperial Stout. When people saw this, as I recall, at the liquor store, they were like, holy fuck, we got to get this. What are we thinking? We can't not get this. Exactly. They all went John Holmes on us home.
No, did they make their old face?
I know. So, I mean, it's by Big Sky Brewing Company in Montana.
And they make some good beer.
I love Montana. I would like to have seen Montana. I love Montana. This is a 9.5% by volume ABV. So
are you kidding me?
Not a bad mother. Is it kind of a bad motherfucker?
That's and a bad motherfucker.
And it's got the bald. It's got the bald dude with like the huge beard going, you will drink Ivan and like it. So pretty excited about it. Let's pour this before it gets too much warmer, and see what we think of this beer. It's supposed to be a pretty bad motherfucker. And I don't say that because I read it somewhere. Just the way everyone else treated it.
Lots of stouts this last couple shows.
Stouts are I think, our favorites. A black IPA is always nice.
Yep.
An American strong ale, or even a Belgian strong ale. I mean, we like a few different things. We've never gone with porters or stouts. They're almost
not brown.
Yeah, they're almost always perfect. This one in particular, the like I say, Ivan the Terrible by Big Sky Brewing. It's you know, the label's pretty cool. It's got a kind of a comic book cover. It's got this guy, very kind of
like a Russian wrestler.
Like those, but I mean the style itself of the label is like those old Russian posters, or propaganda posters. It's gorgeous. We hold it with the monkey lamp, and we get this guy. He's got, I give him like 3.5. Gorgeous looking. Yeah, I heard John ripping too.
I know. This guy
looks
like,
amazing.
I thought I played the guitar in the band.
That's right. I give it a 3.5 on the appearance. Let's go ahead and go for the aroma.
Smells good.
That's nice. Yeah, I do that. Chocolate. 3.5?
Yeah.
Nice and robust. Let's go. Let's knock this out, dude. I'm excited. Enjoy. Oh, nice. A little smoke, slightly bit smoky. Chocolatey.
Very chocolatey. Yeah.
Nice.
Bitter chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
A little bitter finish.
Nice.
You think?
It's nice.
Very
yeah,
nice.
It is, but I like it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like you're sort of straight ahead stout.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not trying to blow your mind with anything, but we're not fucking around either.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that. So that's good. So I'd give the taste maybe a 3.5?
3.5, yeah.
3.5. And as far as mouthfeel, I mean, it doesn't feel, it's not too carbonated. You don't taste the alcohol.
No.
For a 9.5, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is really impressive.
But the, it's not too, I mean, it's just, for being a stout, you expect it to be kind of chunkier, creamier.
Yeah.
It's not, but I'm not complaining.
A little watery, a little chewy, but more watery.
Yeah, I'd say 3.5.
Yeah.
This might get a straight 3.5.
Yeah,
this is
I'd
nice.
Go with that.
I like it. And let's, while we're at it, let's go ahead and do the temperature on this bad boy. He's at 61.
Really?
So he's a little above the normal ideal temperature. But again, no complaints. Sweet. Well, all right. So overall, give this guy 3.5, we said?
Totally.
Nice.
Totally.
Let's move on. As well, you alluded to...
before we leave this great subject, why don't we play something from a band? I'm the keyboard player for Thin Lizzy. I'm going to tie this in.
Nice.
How about a little Dare? You know who Dare is?
No.
It's Darren Wharton, the guitar... keyboard player right there.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
So you kind of went with it. Dare. Kind of with his name.
I've got a red shirt, and I'm going to play the keyboard.
So it could have been called Dare Red Shirt, but I didn't. Good work right there.
I'm trying to transition. I'm trying to make this show more interesting.
I'm trying to make this work, you prick. But, no, seriously, though, let's move on to our topic now that we've done that, because earlier you alluded to it by...
We played some Don Felder.
Speaking of the Don Felder heavy metal, and that's because we're talking about the movie, the original animated masterpiece called Heavy Metal. Let me read our topic here. Fans of the legendary 1981 animated masterpiece Heavy Metal no doubt remember the classic rock tunes from the soundtrack. Well, it's on and popping. It's Genghis and Ragman, you and I, put together our musical picks for the impending Heavy Metal reboot. So, as you may or may not know, Robert Rodriguez, the guy who's directed many films, mostly the mariachi films. He did, what was it called? The Faculty, that sci-fi movie.
The Faculty?
He did The Faculty, Robert Rodriguez. He's a great director. That's the thing. I like him as a director. He's great at doing action. He often writes the movies that he directs, so he's a decent writer. I'm not going to say he blows you out of the water. He's not like a Joss Whedon or any of those guys, but he's capable. And what's nice is, the way he works is, he does things so that he can, if at all possible, leave Hollywood out of the picture altogether.
Right.
He's like a modern-day George Lucas. Lucas's idea was, of course, when he made Star Wars, he says, I want to make this movie myself. Nobody believes in it. Fine. Fuck it. I'll do it myself. I'll raise the money myself. I'll make the movie myself. And guess what? Fox, 20th Century Fox, you can license this movie. I'm going to give you permission to play my movie with your name in front of it for a small fee. But all the money, because I still own this motherfucker, is all mine. Because you didn't believe in me, fuck you. And I like that. I like that people are saying, they're throwing off the shackles of Hollywood and saying, you know what? I don't need you to make a successful movie. Fuck you. You can distribute it when I'm done, but you don't get to tell me how I make it because it's a profit. You know what I mean? They get to make the decisions themselves, and that's great. Same with Robert Rodriguez. He felt the same way. He started his own company, Troublemaker Studios, in Austin, Texas, where he lives. Mm-hmm. And he started making movies on his own. All the Spy Kids movies, completely his movies. He did everything. He did all the special effects himself.
Wow.
He did all the directing, all the editing, I think. I mean, he basically did everything himself. And so he completely owns those movies. Whether you think they're brilliant masterpieces or not is irrelevant. The point is, he was able to make three of them, not just one. He got the funding to do three of them and was able to sell those, and there's plenty of kids that love those fucking
things.
Yeah. They think they're great. It's simple, you know, kiddie fare. But the point is, he goes, I didn't need Hollywood to do it. I did it all on my own. It was really more to kind of like a proof of concept to show that it is possible to make a movie without Hollywood's interference, do it all on your own, on your terms, and reap all the benefits from it. So to that end, he bought the rights to Heavy Metal. Recently, like 2 or 3 years ago. And he's been ever since trying to make the next installment, basically. You had the original Heavy Metal, which was a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had that Heavy Metal 2000, which was shite.
Yeah.
Which is like 20 years after the fact. Now it's almost 20 years later after that. You know,
yeah,
it's 15 years later.
Yeah.
So why not do it again? I think it'd be great. So what my idea was, let's do a Heavy Metal reboot. And you can join us, Genghis and Ragman, as we play Hollywood producers, offer our ideas for stories, voice actors, and most importantly, the soundtrack.
Right.
Because as anyone remembers from the original Heavy Metal, regardless of how you felt about the film, the soundtrack was pretty primo.
Oh, totally.
And the sad thing was, is it took years and years for that soundtrack to come out because there's all these licensing, you know, things going on. They were all fighting.
All these bands from different labels.
So my ideas, unfortunately, will probably involve more fighting, but I think that with something like this, you could really do a lot with this. I think, obviously, we need to continue the saga of the Lochnar, which was this green gem that was the sum of all evils, as the narrator said. And we need to continue its sort of journey through the galaxy as it tries to spread evil. And then finally, of course, being defeated by the Tarakian, or the descendant thereof, of the Tarakian, at the end. Now, I'm thinking, first of all, this is going to be years after the original movie, years and years, decades, really. So let's go all the way and have a futuristic version of the Tarakian.
Sure.
All cybered out and badass.
Yeah.
Of course, because it's animated, let's do the same animated. But again, like they did the first time, each story is told by a different animation studio. But who says it has to be traditional cell animation? Let's do some 3D Pixar type shit.
Yeah, Pixar.
You were saying, I'd love to see some Pixar animated shit. That's an awesome idea. And in fact, the software that Pixar uses to make their movies is called RenderMan. They just released it for free to the public.
Yeah.
Anybody can make their own Pixar movie, basically,
awesome.
Now, for free, as long as you got the hardware to make it happen. I think that's brilliant, which means all the more possible that someone's going to make this shit. And I would run with the story. Basically, do anything you want, as long as it tells the story of the Lochnar spreading evil, whatever.
Right, right.
And then that's where you and I come in with our music ideas.
Well, let's look at the original soundtrack real quick.
Sure. It had some really great shit on it.
I agree.
It wasn't straight metal. Despite the movie being called Heavy Metal, and based on this old, I think, French comic book anthology called Heavy Metal, sci-fi kind of stories.
But think about it, too. It was 81 when Heavy Metal came out?
Early 80s. Might as well be 80, right?
Yeah,
so that's 80, like 30 80, years ago.
So that's really before Heavy Metal took off. So they picked that, some of the heavier bands.
Right, it's Heavy Metal. You're right. I never thought of that. As it was starting to really take shape and
Boston,
say, we're a new genre that kicks ass called Heavy Metal. You're right. And therefore, I think it's good, just like the original movie, to have a mix of old music and new music.
Right.
So I'm thinking you could have stuff like, I would throw some Alice in Chains in there.
Yeah.
Maybe some Motorhead. I mean, I've got a little list here I'm picking. Motorhead, some Symphony X for some new progressive heavy shit.
Some DT, maybe.
Some DT would be awesome. District 97, one of our favorites. We got a female singer who does a progressive rock kind of deal. We've got Ark back then, an old Bjorn Land project that was pretty awesome. Deep Purple, I think, would be nice.
Perfect Strangers.
A little Different Strangers would be awesome. Get some Led Zeppelin, Cashmere. You got to have some Led Zeppelin somewhere in there.
And I'm thinking Kiss, Shock Me.
Kiss would be great. That's the thing. I think you could get some great classic old bands.
Yeah.
For as awesome as that soundtrack was in the original Heavy Metal, there's a lot of movies. I mean, you could think of like a several songs off the top of your head to go, why wasn't that in the movie?
Yeah.
You had Black Sabbath. That's awesome. Mob Rules is kick-ass. You had Journey.
Yeah.
But you had Open Arms, the ballad.
It worked.
Cheap Trick a couple of times. You had some really great songs like Sammy Hagar's Heavy Metal.
Sure.
That's iconic because, I mean, that's the name of the movie. But you could have the modern-day version of that. Somebody who rocks the fuck out of a stage, makes some great grooving music, and doesn't necessarily have to tell a story, but sort of plays as the backdrop to the story that you're telling.
Well, as far as the original soundtrack goes, do you have a favorite song?
Probably anything that was called heavy metal. So either the Sammy Hagar version or the Don Felder version. Of course, Don Felder had that song, Heavy Metal...
Taking a Ride.
Taking a Ride, which
we
is
We just
really
played
good.
That, so is there a song you'd like to play?
Hey, I would go with... let's go with the opening to the actual movie, Radar Rider by Riggs.
Nice.
That's a great one. But you got that Corvette dropping out of the shuttle.
Fuck yeah.
That's the thing. There was these great iconic images.
Yeah.
And technically, that really wasn't. I don't think that was animation. It was really like rotoscoping. I mean, you could tell it was film, and then they kind of colored over it to make it look like a drawing. But it was really cool. I mean, you just have like a fucking badass hot rod flying through space, and the dude like you're shifting gears, and he drops to the ground and goes. And he just takes off, and you're like, that looks fucking
cool.
That's
a killer track.
And that's the idea. It's like, let's just have like a cool rock and roll attitude.
Totally.
And so I would think something like that. If you ever read the Lobo comics, which, you know, a lot of people think are kind of cheesy, but it sort of bought into that idea. You've got this badass dude who's practically invincible. He's basically going to go like a biker in space. Gets on a big old space motorcycle and just goes taking off, tearing through the universe, and anybody gets in his way, he just beats their ass.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it's like, let's do a modern version of that. Have something like that. And I'm thinking that's the theme. You start off with maybe some kind of character like this in all these robes, can't tell who or even what their gender is, just somebody in robes. They get on a bike, space bike, start tearing through the universe. Anything gets in their way, they beat its ass.
Yeah.
Keep on going. So you get the idea like, this is a bad motherfucker. I don't know who it is, but it's a bad motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the movie, when the Lochnar is about to come over and take over the world and kick ass, when everything looks the darkest, this guy bursts onto the scene, goes, I fucking made it. I'm here. I've been all through this movie. I've been traveling to this point. I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what, Lochnar? You're fucked. Kicks ass. And then when it's done, tears off the robes, and it's the fucking Tarakian,
the
white-haired chick from the first movie that saved the universe.
That'd be killer.
And keep that story going.
What if it went, fuck you?
She comes out and she just goes, you're fucked. That kind of concept. Now, unfortunately, Percy Rodriguez, who was the uncredited guy that did the voice of the Lochnar in the first movie, he's not around us anymore. He died a few years ago. You have to get somebody else. But you can get somebody cool like James Earl Jones. Exactly. Somebody with a badass voice to do that
totally.
Shit. I think that would be awesome. Continue the story.
I got to say, the soundtrack was impeccable. I mean, song that they used fit the scene for the most part.
Even the slow ballad.
Even the Stevie Nicks shit.
Yeah, the non-heavy metal ones, we'll say.
But my favorite track on the CD or album at that point was probably Reach Out and Take It by Cheap Trick.
Nice.
Love that song. Let's play it.
Don't be
Yeah, that's what's nice, is you could tell whoever was in charge of saying, I'm going to pick the music,
they did
a
what
really
doing.
Great job. Yeah, they picked tunes by people that weren't necessarily, it's like, even though the thing's called heavy metal, they didn't say, well, then let's pick a bunch of heavy metal bands. They could have picked Iron Maiden. They could have picked Judas Priest. They could have really loaded this up with heavy shit, but they said, that's not our point. So they did stuff that I think fit the sequence. Like this sequence where the Corvette drops on the ground, we need something that kind of has a rock and roll feel.
Sure.
But isn't necessarily metal.
Yeah.
Just has a nice gritty feel, organic feel. And they did that. So I like that. And I think they need to keep that up when they do this new version of heavy metal. Find songs, pardon me, that fit the story or the scene, whatever's playing the vignette, but don't necessarily overpower it. You don't want it to be more.
But it makes a classic rock or hard
rock, gives it just
or whatever,
a great vibe.
With some of the newer stuff.
Gives you a great vibe, exactly.
But heavy, didn't Heavy Metal 2000, it kind of had like a vibe of all the newer bands at the time, like Rob Zombie.
I think that was the problem, is that when Heavy Metal 2000 came out, somebody clearly said, hey, look, 19 years ago, 20 years ago, we had this great-ass movie that we didn't know it at the time, but now we can see in retrospect has become this huge cult classic. We'd be foolish not to try to cash in on that.
Sure.
So let's make an updated version, a new version, basically what we're proposing now. But for whatever reason, whoever was in charge just didn't have the goods.
No.
Either they didn't care enough about the spirit of the original to kind of carry it forward, or they didn't have the talent to pull it off. They had the spirit, but they didn't have the talent.
Yeah.
And then they just get a shitty version of it. Like you had Julie Strain, whoever, who's the chick playing the badass chick in this one. And she's known as a model who just likes to show her tits, basically, I think, is my understanding. So she's very titillating, but that's no substance. It's all just superficial. Look at my tits.
You think of the actors in the first one, it's like all the SCTV guys.
Yeah,
like
a lot
John
of
Candy,
people familiar with comedy.
Yeah.
Right. People familiar with comedy, people had at least some modicum of acting ability they practiced, you know, from doing the SCTV. So, yeah.
Right.
Whereas Julie Strain, what acting credit does she have? She's just like, just look at me naked. And that's basically all she knows how to do. So, not to be, you know, judgmental, but essentially that's what I get out of it. And that's my point. I think they went the wrong way with that. They did the typical 80s excess.
I think you got to go back to the comedic angle, like you did in the first one.
Have a little touch of humor.
Get a guy like Dave Attell or Patton Oswalt.
Patton Oswalt, right. Get some of these great comics of the time. And are you saying that in the sense that they need to add some dialogue or that they just need to have their voice?
Well, if they could improv a little bit, that would be even funnier.
I think so, too.
Just depends.
Yeah. There's certainly funny moments in the first one where you had, like, robots, like, when it goes into the police station, Harry Canyon.
Yeah.
And this robot's like, I don't have my papers with me, but I swear they're in my other pants. It's like a robot guy. It's like, you're clearly an alien, dude.
Yeah.
And he's just like, no, I'm a
that
citizen.
That was Eugene Levy, too, wasn't it?
Was it? It probably was. That's
and then
the
Bruce
thing.
Willis was the one guy, right?
Oh, was he really? I didn't
I
notice
think
that.
So.
I think John Candy was one of them.
No, John Candy was, he was either that robot, he was a
but his thing is like one of the cops, he's like, you think you can do better? And he's like, hey, you know, here's a dollar, thanks for nothing. When he's got the hooker over his shoulder.
I thought Harry Canyon was Bruce Willis, but maybe not.
He might be, I don't know. I'd have to look that up. I don't think that he was. But the point is, I like the idea of, they got kind of a noirish feel with the Harry Canyon. They went one of those old kind of Sam Spade, old school detective type dudes.
Sure.
Down on his luck, but solves a crime and fixes everything. That kind of deal. And, you know, like I say, continue all this kind of shit. Keep it going. Keep that feel of it. Richard Romanus was Harry Canyon, by the way.
Oh, okay.
But you're right. They did have a lot of SCTV dudes in it. And they did
Joe Flaherty was in it, too.
Oh, fuck yeah. I think Dave Thomas was somebody in there as well. John Candy certainly, clearly was one of them. I mean, that's what's amazing is you had a lot of great actors at the time, or comedic actors. There's clearly a comedic bent to it. I don't know that I would rely so much on the comedy. I think that takes away from it. I think what I would focus on for this version is special effects, make it look really badass, and focus on the music. I think the actors will probably fall into place.
Well, I mean, you've got to have people in there with... I mean, it doesn't have to be someone super famous, but they got to be able to deliver the line. I mean, and we talked about this. How many characters did John Candy play?
Right.
Several. And Eugene Levy.
I think that's the thing in a movie like that, especially back in the day, if you had a great voice for radio, essentially, where you were able to do a bunch of different voices and stuff and have them all sound distinct, then they said, we want you. We want you to play this role, this role, this role, record it all, we'll mix it together, those special effects, going to be great. And it works.
Right.
But in this, people have different expectations, right? You're going to have, we're going to have video, we're going to have, I want to see some 3D, graphics and stuff, maybe some VR, whatever. They're going to have more sophisticated requirements and therefore more a higher threshold of believability. Like, I don't know if I buy this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine, but I really think it's all in the soundtrack and the movie quality that you throw in.
Sure.
And I don't know. I think these days it's pretty hard to come by good movie quality.
I mean, if you could do the whole thing in Pixar, that'd be kind of cool.
And like I said, that software that makes that happen is free now.
It's free, so why not?
So, I mean, I would do it just for the fuck of it. Sure. And a lot of people, thanks to YouTube and all these other sort of free online programs, you can post your shit up there and say, hey, this is my stuff. I made it. Contact me if you like it.
Sure.
Months later, some guy will go, I'm from fucking Hollywood. I saw your video. You're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say? Join my team. And they know in part because it's like, because you're nobody and you're hungry, I can pay you a lot less than if I paid a fucking professional guy.
Sure.
But I'll get the same kind of quality because you're badass.
Right.
So they still win. So I think it could work out very easily. Not a problem. I think the soundtrack, like to recap before we end this, is very important. But pretty doable. Throw in some, like I say, some new metal, some old metal, we're done.
Yeah,
you know, not that hard.
Mix.
The licensing may be a little bit of a nightmare, but hopefully in this day and age of digital shit, it's like, look, who gives a fuck? As long as I get my cut, do it however you want.
Yeah.
And I think it would be great. We just hope that Robert Rodriguez will write a good story or have other people write good stories.
Right.
And knock some good metal out.
Is that reasonable? If he doesn't, we'll rough him up.
He's not that far away.
Tommy,
in 3 hours,
Tommy's
we'll be in
back.
Austin. We're beating his ass inside of 3 hours.
True.
We're home in time for cornflakes.
And Tommy's almost out of rehab, so forget about it.
It's like smack.
Listen to him. Our hands are washed. We didn't know.
Hey, yeah.
He's so stupid. It's just like, all those guys told me to do it. It's like,
I was looking for my Wyandots.
We don't even know him. The Wyandot. It's all about the Wyandot.
I blacked out. I have no knowledge of this.
Shit. Or something about the union.
No shit. Something like they fucked me on the wire in that union. In any case, what do you think? We should dive into some...
classics?
Some classics.
I got a classic over here.
You do?
You ever dive for pearls?
I have. Many times.
How about a band called Diving for Pearls? Pearls.
Nice.
Got a song called You're All I Know. Actually, I was checking the CD out over the weekend. A great one. And I forgot how great it was. I said, I gotta play that for a classic. Just to let everybody know how cool this band was. They only had a couple records. and then said, see you later. Then just took over and said, fuck you.
You're cool. Fuck you. All right, let's do it.
How about you over there?
A little classic of the week or pick of the week? You pick. Pick a card.
Classic.
Classic.
You know what? I say we do a little, let's knock out a little Queensryche.
Look at you.
I don't believe in love.
You don't? You can still. Vocalist.
We'll just do duets, man.
We'll just do this.
Sit on corner streets and just sing.
I don't believe in love. I never have.
I'm not sure that voice, but you've done it before.
I don't want to do my job.
It's not a good job.
Pick of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Going for a band called Eclipse.
Nice.
Got a brand new record called
Armageddon Eyes.
Damn.
We're not in Armageddon. We're going to Armageddonize. We're going to, like, populate and shit.
I miss you say, damn, baby.
We're going to pluralize, bitch. Motherfucker. So, no, they got a brand new record. It's really cool. I want to play a song called Stand on Your Feet. So get up and step on your feet.
Down.
For me, if we're doing the pick of the week, I don't know if I mentioned it before, but this Cyrax is a French metal band.
Cyrax wins.
It sounds like a fucking Mortal Kombat game. This is a French band that mixes progressive rock, classic heavy metal, and straight ahead classical music in an interesting mix. So there's some really great musicianship on this album, and it's their second, but I think you'll dig this. This is called Cockroach. So that's that, and there it is.
Sweet. Another great show down the tubes. We give you so many great things to look forward to. And we got a great interview for you, Pizza Hut. Pizza the Hut's coming for you.
You taste delicious, boss.
Fucking Pizza the Hut. So, he got trapped in the limo and had to eat himself to death or some shit. Fucking ridiculous.
It's frogs in it.
Let's knock the shit out, you goofy
fucking
bastard.
Tree frogs.
It must have been a goat.
So anyway, we want to thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. When we give you two big holds up.
This is Rob DeLuca from UFO, and you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up.
Guys, you're on live with Genghis Ragman and Rob DeLuca from UFO. Give it up. Rob, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I want to start off by congratulating you and the rest of the guys on an excellent, excellent, I can't say that enough times, album. This thing is awesome, A Conspiracy of Stars. I got to say, this is the best UFO record in several years, at least for me as a fan. I don't know what clicked on this record, but can you kind of tell us, you know, I think this is your very first record to play on with UFO, isn't it? Am I correct?
Yes, it is. And thank you for for the nice compliments on the record. I feel really strongly about it too. I think it's really strong, and it was a lot of fun to make it. The differences of previous records, there were three major differences that I know about. The first one is they changed producers. They had been doing their records with a German producer the last few records, and that was since Vinny came into the band, so probably the last dozen years they were doing their records with a German producer. And this record they switched to Chris Sangaridis, who's a British guy who's worked with Judas Priest and Thin Lizzy and Iron Maiden, so he's a real hard rock guy, and he's very like-minded to the band. So that was one major change, and it worked out really well. A second thing that was different is we worked on the songs together live in a room, in a rehearsal room, the way that bands always used to do it back in the day. And we did that for 3 or 4 days because we were on tour last spring, and there was that conflict in Russia with Ukraine and Crimea. So we decided to cancel our shows there because it was a very dangerous time being there. And we went instead to a room in Germany and worked up these ideas, a lot of ideas for the record. Probably like about half of the songs on the record we worked up in Germany. So that was a major difference, because a lot of bands can't get in a room and jam anymore, you know, because it's just not cost effective or logistics. And the third difference is I played on this record and I contributed to it, so, which I hadn't previously, like you mentioned. So those three things, none of them in itself are huge, but the three added up are definitely substantial. And with me, like, I'd done hundreds of shows with them, so that comfortability, that dynamic, that intuition is definitely there. And that comes through on everything, recordings, you know, live, everything, you know, how we interact, you know. So I think those are the differences.
Well, and you say this is the first time you've written material for UFO. Was it intimidating to be sort of the new guy offering your own material, or was it actually solicited by the other members?
It, I think Vinny suggested I suggest it, and so I did. And I think the initial email I sent to management, I think Vinny and I had a conversation or two about it, and he kind of guided me the best way to go about it, which I really appreciate. And it just shows how cool he is. Because some guys would be like, no, I want only my songs on there, you know.
Right.
And he was very encouraging. Was it intimidating? No, because, you know, even though they are a legendary band, they make you feel very comfortable. I've never felt intimidated around them. And I've been writing songs since I was a kid, you know. I'm not saying they were always great, but I've been writing songs since I was a kid. So the concept, the process, I do it all the time. So I just sent them some songs, and the worst they could say is they didn't like them, you know. So I wasn't stressed about it. I was certainly hopeful and curious, but not stressed, not intimidated.
Well, Rob, I've got a question. You've been in the band since 08, and this is your first time to, you know, write with them, and you're a member of the band. Do you think that, you know, early on they were kind of waiting to see what Pete's situation was going to be before they said, do you think that contributed to you? They saying, okay, Pete's doing his thing now. Now we can officially get Rob more involved? Or you think it was just kind of any encouraging you? Or you think there was any holding back just because they didn't know what Pete's situation was going to be?
I think they were waiting to see how many wrong notes I played. And I guess I didn't play that many wrong notes. So. No, I definitely think that had something to do with it. I mean, Pete is their brother, you know, like, you can't erase that history. You cannot erase it. They talk about him all the time. They miss him. They love him. They wish the best for him. I think that had something to do with it, you know, like just seeing if he got, you know, healthy and focused. So I guess as time goes on, that looks less likely. But I, you know, I'm not saying never, because I don't know, you know.
Well, and it shows, I think, too, the confidence they must have had in you, as well as how much they appreciated your output, by putting one of your songs as the opener to the album, which is a great song, The Killing Kind, as well as King of the Hill, which is a bonus track. So they must have thought, this is some pretty good material this guy's cranking out. Let's put this in a place of prominence. I like how it opens the album. It's a great, great way to start things off.
I agree with, like, bonus track, if it's not very good, no one's going to buy the bonus CD. They're just going to buy, you know, like, if it's a throwaway song, I would assume it costs more for the bonus CD, and no one will buy it. So I think it's smart to put a strong song on it. It makes it that much more interesting. And I do think King of the Hill is a very strong song. I love that song. And thank you for the compliments. I'm really proud and excited of you know, what Phil did with the songs, where he took them lyrically and melodically and tonally. And I just couldn't be more happy. You know, the record's doing well, and the reviews are pretty consistently like what you said, you know, just that it's the best record in a long time. That's not for me to say, but that's what a lot of the reviews say. And it's really exciting time. And now we've been promoting it on the road. We just did Europe, and we had a few weeks off. And now on Tuesday we leave for UK, and we're doing a very thorough UK tour of like 18 shows. And UK is small, you know, it's not a big country like size wise. And 18 shows is very systematic. It's very thorough, you know. So we're hitting pretty much every market, and the shows are always very, very well sold over there, and it's just a lot of fun to be playing with them in their home country. You know, it's great.
Yeah, it's got to be awesome, man. And I agree with Genghis 100% that the start of the record with The Killing Kind, as soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, yeah. You know, and I think it shows. I mean, you've been playing with the band on tour for several years. You get in there and you get to write with them. And it seems like a very, I would say, and I'm not knocking the last few records, but I think this one seems a bit more cohesive. And I think it's because what you said you did. You guys jammed in a room where it wasn't just a bunch of file sharing over the internet, you know?
Thank you. I mean, I do like their last few records quite a bit. I really am a big fan of Vinnie Moore and his writing and his abilities. But I do agree that this record sounds a little different. Thank you for the compliments. I appreciate it.
Well, another song I wanted to bring up, which I cannot get off my CD player, which I have to keep hitting the back button because this thing talking about Vinnie Moore and his playing, man, on Sugarcane, the soloing and ripping that guy is doing is insane. It's so awesome. It's probably my solo of the year so far for 2015. That's, and what a great song, too.
Drinking a glass of water for him, you know, it's just nothing, you know, and but you know, he's worked hard for so many years to be able to do that, you know, and he's evolved quite a bit, you know, from what I see through his early Shredder records to his solo records to his UFO records, you know, he's always growing and he just gets better and better.
Oh,
he's a great rhythm guitarist too, like people. He's so respected as a lead guitar player. People don't talk about his rhythm guitar playing very much at all. Not that anyone says it's not, it's bad. They just don't mention it. But he's a great rhythm guitar player. And I think he enjoys playing rhythm just as much as soloing. He's really into it.
Yeah, definitely. I guess when you say that, just out of curiosity, when you say a rhythm player, how do you judge that? How do you say, like, this guy's playing, you know, an A chord any better than another A chord? Not to give you a hard time. I'm curious.
No.
That means.
But well, it's a few things together. You know, it's where you voice the chords, how you voice them. You know, which notes. Say you got three notes, but it could be a different note on top or the bottom. You can move it all over the neck. And it sounds different. And with one chord, that's not such a big deal. But when you're stringing a bunch of chords together, it starts to create melodies within the chord movement, and also the rhythm of it, your right hand. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to it. You know, it's you know, it can be analyzed, but sometimes it's just intangible. You know, someone like Malcolm Young, he's just, or Eddie Van Halen, or Ian MacKaye from Fugazi, they're just some of the best rhythm guitar players. Why? Who knows? You know, and Vinny's up there with them, you know?
That's awesome. Well, you know, another song that I'm really digging, and it's right next to the bonus track, is Rollin' Rollin'. That's a really cool kind of bluesy kind of tune. Can you tell us a cool story about how that song came together for y'all?
Crisscross my floor, cries be on my door. Soar up through my window, disrupt my sleep. This addictional coma, I'm counting black sheep. I say no.
I don't remember a specific story about it, but I thought it was really interesting how Vinnie was leaving space in the verses for keyboards and just the bass, underlying bass, bass line it's basically the guitar line. I'm just copying it, and he drops out for the verses. So I don't remember anything notable about that other than the fact that I like it right away. I thought it comes in powerful, and then it gets nice and moody. And I thought Paul Raymond did some really interesting keyboard sounds on it. And I like it a lot, too. I really do. I think my favorite on the record, though, is The Real Deal. Lately, that's been my favorite. Yeah, and that's a Paul Raymond gem.
Yeah, I love that song, and I also love Devil in the Details. The intro to that's got a totally you think it's going to go somewhere, and then the song goes a little bit different. I kind of like songs like that that kind of keep you guessing where they're going to go, you know.
Playing that one.
When you say you were working in the studio as opposed to like a lot of the younger bands, a lot of people really embrace that technology. Is there any aspect of working in the studio that you think maybe isn't necessarily what it could be? Any parts of it that obviously the energy, you know, you can't beat that, being in a room with other people connecting with them, but maybe parts of it that you say, you know, I can kind of see where the technological side of it, where we're emailing files, is better?
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends on the situation, but it could be argued that certain times when you're in a rehearsal room with a bunch of guys turn up really loud, that the monitoring, that what you're hearing isn't as clear as if you're sitting at home in your headphones. Because, you know, if talking about guitar voicings like I was a couple minutes ago, you know, if you might miss something that someone's playing that might be very important to how how it relates to what you're playing or what you're not playing. So if you can't hear each other well, and if you're just being blasted by volume, it might be counterproductive. But as opposed to sitting at home in a very controlled environment, you know. But I think overall, the live thing, you got to, you know, always keep in mind it's rock and roll. And it's supposed to be an interaction and supposed to be somewhat loud and energetic. So I'm always going to lean towards getting in the room, you know, as being my choice of method.
Well, another question, and I want to go back to something you'd mentioned a little bit earlier. And I got to tell you, back in the day, Genghis and I aren't the youngest guys, so we've been around the block a little bit. But back in the day, and I'm assuming you're probably much of a fan as I am, when you would see a guy's name on the back of a record like a Chris Sangrias, hope I didn't butcher his name, but you pretty much knew it was going to be money, whatever record he touched. And I got to tell you, when I saw that he was producing this record, I got really excited. My question is, how involved does he get in the process with you guys? Does he let you guys pretty much create, and then he says, okay, well, you know, I would do this or do that? Or how involved does he get in with you guys?
Well, I'm a firm believer of sometimes the right guy, you might not notice him much. But if you have the wrong guy, you notice him a lot. And I think that was the situation with Chris. He knew that what the band was really desiring was someone to let them be themselves. He knew that going into it. And so he did. There was a level of trust between us where he just kind of knew to let us do our thing. But he absolutely made suggestions that helped. But I think his suggestions were I can't think of the word, but they're more, you know, like pick your battles kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I think he just kind of knew to let us be a rock band, and he knew how to record a rock band. So it really worked well.
Nice.
He also mixed it. He didn't just record it and produce, he mixed it too. So he was, you know, he did the record by himself pretty much.
Awesome.
Well, you know, I want to ask before we finish up about the touring side of things. You played with UFO for a while, and Ragman and I, being a couple of old farts ourselves, as we just said, we've noticed the demographics of concert-going audiences for both new as well as, you know, veteran bands like UFO, and it seems to us that there's a definite surge in the proportion of younger fans out in the audience. Now, has that been your experience as well? And if so, to what do you attribute that change? Because I have to believe it's more than just a retro fad, as some journalists like to characterize it.
Well, I'm going to be honest. There are new people, young people coming, but I wish there were a lot more, because that is incredibly important to how a band sustains. You know, like, people can't come every year. Maybe they want to, but, you know, the one day that you come through town, they come, and then the next year maybe they're busy, you know. So you can't count on the same people. You know, it's important that you're reaching new people, especially with young people, because that keeps it vital. It keeps it, you know, fresh. And UFO do have young people coming, but I wish it was a lot more. And I'm not sure why that happens or doesn't happen. To answer your question, I think an obvious thing is, you know, your parents played something, for older bands, I'm saying, you know, your parents played something around the house.
Right.
And, you know, maybe back then it's like, oh, that's my parents' music. But then you might have heard it on the radio or something, or just stumbled across and you're like, oh, I know this song. I love this song. Wow, it's really good. Or maybe you liked it all along when you were a kid, you know. Maybe you just thought your parents were the coolest and you trusted their tastes, you know. But I think, you know, I guess there's the fad thing also of retro is cool. And I think it is, retro is cool when it's quality, you know. And the thing about the 70s music is there was a lot of great bands, you know, the like 25 of the best bands ever at one time. Like, you know, we could just go through a list, you know, of like, you know, Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and Aerosmith and, you know, Eagles and Fleetwood Mac and Elton John and all these, you know, Beatles or well, I guess the solo Beatles, like all at once, Lynyrd Skynyrd, all making music at once, you know, it's like, it was the golden age of rock and roll, you know? So it is cool because there's so much quality, you know? But so, you know, hopefully younger people will keep coming out to UFO shows.
Well, as far as touring is concerned, what do you guys have planned? I know you're going to do some stuff in Europe. Do you have any major plans for North America?
I'm hearing rumors, but there's no use talking about it because I haven't heard anything definite. But the fact that I'm hearing rumors is a good sign that we will be doing America in 2015. And we just did Europe, and we're going to UK in a couple days. So, and then we got some more festival stuff in Europe later in the year. We should be in Europe 2 or 3 times this year, and in UK once.
Awesome. Any plans for maybe a live DVD from this tour, or?
I haven't heard any, but I think that's a great idea, and it keeps popping up, that idea, because I think there's a good chemistry between the five of us, and it's kind of an obvious thing for people to suggest, so I'm hoping that will happen as soon as possible.
That'd I'd love nice to see thing. It.
But I haven't heard any definite plans, no.
Yeah, if you guys don't make it to Texas, we would love to see that at least on video.
Yeah. And our drummer lives in Texas, Andy.
Oh, cool. Well, hey, before we let you go, I got to ask you a question because I'm a fan of a previous band of yours, Spread Eagle. And I saw that you guys have done some shows. You reunited a few years back, and I guess you do some stuff sporadic. Is there anything going on with Spread Eagle? Do you think y'all will ever do any new music, or do you think it's just get together for a show every once in a while?
Well, I would like to do as much as possible with Spread Eagle because it's an important band to me and my musical upbringing. It's kind of how I learned, you know, what's right and wrong about being in a band, and it was a great training ground and. The band is still really amazing. When we get together, it's not for any kind of nostalgia. We're still really powerful. So I enjoy it a lot. We were working on some songs a couple of years ago, and then we kind of got sidetracked. And everyone's been really busy. So I'm talking to some people about doing some shows this year. But and I would like to release some music. I think it probably would be best to start with something like an EP, considering how busy we are, and I wouldn't want to be bogged down on a huge project that we can't finish. But right now, there are no immediate plans for recording, but we're talking about doing shows. So.
Well, that's awesome, man. Well, if you come to Texas, we're going to find you.
Thank you.
Well, Rob...
Am I the only one that knows you guys' real names?
No. no, everybody kind of knows, I guess, it's just kind of our stage persona, so to speak, but a lot of the time they'll call us by our regular names, and it's no thing.
I just wanted to make sure I wasn't going to slip on something, and then, you know,
and
we'll be out, and we'll be all over the, you know, CNN, and, you know.
We'll be like Kiss trying to hide our faces in the picture.
Exactly, yeah. Oh shit, Rob! You put us out. Now everybody's gonna know who we are.
They're chasing us down the street.
The mystique's over.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, before we let you go, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
I'd like to say thank you for checking out the new UFO record, The Conspiracy of Stars. It's a really strong record, and I think everyone will really like it. It's a very riffy record and a very muscly. Hard rock record. Check us out on tour in the UK. We'll be there. I'm leaving on Tuesday, and I'll be back on May 8th. And I have another band, Up Earth, that I sing and play for in New York City. You can find us at hubert.bandcamp.com. Check that out. And thanks for listening, these guys.
Well, Rob, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on therighttorock.com. And we want to tell all the fans out there to go check out the new UFO record, because it is badass. A Conspiracy of Stars out on Steam Hammer SPV. Rob, it was awesome talking to you. Thanks for coming on, and we wish you the best of luck.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Feeling kinda weary. Oh, next year may not come back at all. Sometimes I hear the angels are singing. I can hear my mother's call. Give me a Cadillac for a carrot, and you'll hear my name will spread through the trees. Call me Mr. Black, you can call me Mr. Gray, or you can call me simply, you call me Mr. Freeze.
You've been listening to Genghis and Ragman Show. I'm your announcer, Joey Clams, reminding you to check out the Odyssey here on the show, wherever you can find them, on your favorite online outlet or through iTunes, whatever you want. And by the way, while you're at iTunes, be sure to leave us a review and spread the word about the Genghis and Ragman Show over at therighttorock.com, where you can find CD, DVD, and Blu-ray reviews, as well as the occasional concert review, a piece of music news about your favorite bands in the heavy metal genre. And be sure especially to check out the website of our official third man here, Tracy G, who writes all our original music, including the Broken Man theme song that opens up the show. That's for you, brother. Well, that's it, and there it is. Until next time, this is your announcer, Joey Clams, telling you to drink good beer and keep those horns up.